I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
She doesn't fucking give me the steam off a piss.
This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this.
You sold me out.
Did I?
Yes.
To who?
Picture it, Dublin. I can't remember what year it was, 2018, I think. Do you remember for our anniversary? We went to a hotel for a night. Just one night for our anniversary. It was just like, only in Dublin.
Oh, we got a suite.
We did, yeah. We actually got an upgrade and we got a suite. It was lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really lucked out in that one.
I didn't sell you out.
You did. When we were checking out and I was talking to the receptionist, paying for it, and the rate was €89 a night.
Yeah.
And
it was a good offer.
It was really, we were paying for a standard room, we just happened to get the upgrade.
Yeah.
But yeah, she inverted the numbers and said, that's €98. And I went, you mean 89? And she went, that's what I said. And you've turned, because I looked at you, kind of like, the attitude in this one. And you went, yeah, no, she did say that, she did. She walked away to print off the invoice.
Yeah.
And you leaned into me and went, no, you're right. She did. She did invert the numbers. But you sold me out in front of her. You fucking took the receptionist.
We got a good rate off him.
But we were meant to have the good rate.
98 was still a bargain.
But it wasn't what I should have been paying.
That suite we had was about 200 not a night, yeah. At least.
Yes. But my point being, I didn't want to pay an extra like 10 quid. Because that's not what I had booked. And it was the way, she literally looked at me and went, that's what I said.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. So I was like, right.
She said it confidently. So it made me think.
But then you turned to me and you're like, no, she did. She got it wrong. And I'm like, why didn't you say it?
Yeah.
You really want to impress that receptionist, didn't you? You didn't want to look bad. Just fucking sell me out though.
Well, I'm
you remember that, yeah?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Awful.
Yeah.
That was the anniversary ruined anyway.
See, I didn't know her from Adam, but I've known you to make mistakes over the years. So, as a betting man,
mm-hmm.
I went with the odds.
But you always say I'm very...
stubborn.
Yeah, I can be. No, but to do with money. Like, I'm not good at maths, yeah?
She doesn't fucking give me the steam off a piss.
I'm not good with maths, but you always say as soon as it comes to money, I'll be like, working it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, can I just, I take issue with that. It's not that I'm scabby with money. I'll happily pay for something for you or what have you. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just that I don't like wasteful spending. You know, like if I'm to order something, if I'm to get myself something online, some new clothes.
Yeah.
I will spend a month and a half revising the basket, yes, before I actually put the order through, to the point that stuff goes out of stock and I'm devastated.
Actually, this falls in nicely. So to do with spending, I've been watching what I'm spending and I saw something advertised online and it was for a hoodie and on the front it says, you're enough.
You are enough, yeah.
You are enough, yeah.
Get it right.
And then on the back it says, Dear the person behind me, the world is a better place with you in it. Mm-hmm. Love the person in front of you.
Yeah.
There was 15 quid each. I was like, 30 quid for two hoodies, that's a fucking bargain. And Megan was like, you soppy fucker. Like, and I was like, if that makes someone smile, you know, I think it's well worth it.
Yeah.
The hoodies came and I tried one on. I got one in beige, one in black.
You don't even wear beige.
I've been known to.
I just think you're going to try it on and you're going to be like, oh, this is lovely. And then you're going to walk past the mirror like an hour later and go, oh, I feel very uncomfortable in this colour.
So I tried the black one on and is it good enough fit? Wouldn't you say?
So yeah, it looks lovely
good,
on you.
Good enough fit. And then I looked down and the O.
This was only about an hour later.
The O on the U was hanging on for dear life. It's still...
I turned to Neil and I saw it and he was like, oh no, look at this. And I cracked up laughing because I said to him, in a week's time, all the front of it's going to read is enough.
So we're actually thinking of maybe doing our own variation of it and putting it on the website as merch.
Yeah.
With good print.
But ours is probably going to be more obnoxious.
Yeah. Like I off top of my head, dear the person behind me, the world would be a better place if you stopped acting the bollocks.
Yeah, so we're not quite as aspirational or inspirational or what have you.
Yeah.
We're more just like, fucking cut the shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, a few shout outs to do.
Two. Two is a couple. Few is three.
Few is three or more.
Absolutely is not.
It.
That's a bunch.
I will...
Actually, you know, if a few is three,
yeah.
What's a fair few? Like, fair
seven,
few of them.
Like six or seven.
A fair, do you know that?
No. See, when I said it confidently, you were like, oh. excuse me, we have a couple shout outs to do. Actually, no, hang on. Technically.
Okay.
It's a few.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, anyway. First shout out goes to Jen and Barry. And Neil and I were a little bit irate about this. You know, we're like, oh, new Patreon member. Brilliant. Great. And then we noticed that they'd given themselves a name.
Yeah.
And we thought, that's our fucking job.
Yeah.
You're putting us out of business here.
And it is what I would have gone with.
Yeah. So Jen and Barry or Ben and Jerry.
Yeah.
You see what they did there?
The shit flavoured ice cream.
They inverted it.
What's the shittest Ben and Jerry's?
The fish food.
Your fish food. The fish
eating
food.
Prick. Yeah, no, they inverted that just like that hotel receptionist did.
Oh.
Yeah. So, thank you, hotel workers. What if they actually are? And they get creeped out that we know their profession.
That's a good point.
Hmm.
Yeah, so fish food and...
Cookie dough.
Cookie dough, is that a shit one?
I'm not as overly keen on it. My favourite is the caramel choo-choo.
Hang on, we can go even better. The low-calorie fish food and the low-calorie cookie dough. They do like the low-calorie ones.
Look, lads, if you're getting ice cream, there's no point of, you know, it's... Don't do it.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you, Jen and Barry. Next we have Tracy. You know, young Tracy.
Young Tracy. Okay.
What are the chances any listeners get the reference there? I'm going to leave that one with you, lads. See if any of you know what show that's from.
Ah, the Brits will.
I have faith that the Brits are going to know it.
Yeah. And the Irish, actually, because it's big enough in Ireland as well.
And the Irish, yeah. I mean, I fucking know it. So here's hoping. But, I mean, that show came out, what, 25 years ago? So it's not even like it's current, you know?
Young Tracy.
Young Tracy.
Well, she'll love it because you're calling her Young Tracy.
Young Tracy. So thank you.
But then you could play off a name as well, like Trace, as if you're tracing something, like Trace these nuts.
So thank you, Jen, Barry and Tracy. We appreciate you. CrimeCon London, partnered by True Crime. The expert-led True Crime channel, available on your platform of choice. With CrimeCon London 2025 just around the corner, now is the time to grab your ticket. Come chat to Neil and I about cases, theories, or possibly discuss whatever is plaguing Neil's mind that day.
I'm still trying to solve the Paul Logan case. Also, did you know polar bear's skin is black?
And after a full day of amazing content, don't forget to join us for a drink afterwards. This year, Neil and I will be joining Esther from Once Upon a Crime for a bit of trivia in a brand new live show called Killer Knowledge. Test your knowledge and see if you can outsmart Neil or myself, which, let's be honest, wouldn't be too hard.
Speak for yourself.
Over the course of the weekend, there's not only going to be brilliantly presented talks, but incredibly important topics in true crime being discussed. Where Esther, Neil and I come into play is to hopefully provide a bit of well-deserved comic relief for you guys. If you're interested in joining us and many other wonderful content creators over the weekend of the 7th and 8th of June, use code MORTAL for 10% off at crimecon.co.uk.
Wait, that can't be all.
Well, you're right, Neil, that is not all. Platinum and VIP tickets are available to give you exclusive access to further content, more one-on-one time with CrimeCon cast, and more exclusive benefits. CrimeCon also want to make the experience more cost accessible, and they've implemented installment plans available across all ticket types, allowing you to spread the cost of your ticket. CrimeCon London, partnered by True Crime. And remember, use code MORTAL for 10% off.
So, with all that out of the way, what are we doing today?
Well, today, Neil, we are going to be talking about the Saskatoon freezing deaths, also known as the Starlight Tours.
Tour. Okay.
On the 28th of January in the year 2000, Daryl Knight is spotted by police as he leaves a party that he had attended in an apartment building. Without any apparent reason, he's taken into custody. There were rumours about this happening, the Starlight Tours, and for Daryl, as he put it, they were all coming true. The Starlight Tours were known among natives. This was when police would pick up Indigenous people, usually men, and drop them off pretty much in the middle of nowhere and leave them in freezing conditions.
What people?
Indigenous.
So what?
People who are Indigenous.
All I'm getting is Insidious.
No, Indigenous. Native. To that land, that area, that place, country.
Okay.
As they drive, Daryl can hear crunching as the tyres drove over the snow. It was minus 25 degrees Celsius, minus 13 Fahrenheit. They bring him to a field on the outskirts of town. He pleads with them not to leave him there, telling them that he will freeze to death. Their response, that's your fucking problem, and they drive away. Daryl was not dressed for low temperatures, with not much more than a denim jacket to protect himself from the bitter cold. Luckily, Daryl was familiar with the area, and was able to make his way through the snow to a nearby power station. While patrolling, a security guard hears Daryl pounding on the door and comes to his aid. Daryl struggled to come to terms with just how close he came to death, and he had made the decision to move out of the area and to British Columbia. Quote, in Saskatoon, I found it very hard to recover from and move on from what they did to me that January night. On the 29th of January, the day following Daryl being abandoned on the outskirts of town, another man is found in the same area where Daryl had been dumped. 25-year-old Rodney Nastis. His body was found topless and by a politician while out for her morning jog. On the 3rd of February, the body of 30-year-old Lawrence Wegner was found in the same area. When family asked about what had happened to him, it seemed the police didn't really want to tell the family much about how or why he would have been out there. When his father asked to see the body, they were told they were unable to do so as he was still frozen.
So is this a bit like Irish vanishing triangle sort of thing? It's just, well, it's not because they vanished. This kind of opposite. But like, do you get what I mean? The premise of it, like, there's just, I don't know where I'm going with this.
No, I get what you're saying. It's kind of almost this legend in the area. Like Daryl said, there was rumours of this happening.
Yeah.
But no, I get where you're coming from, but no, it's fairly apparent who was doing this.
Oh, okay.
While out during a vigil for his son, Lawrence's father said that it struck him just how cold it was, and he was dressed for the weather. Police claimed that Lawrence must have walked out there by himself. When Lawrence was found, he wasn't wearing any shoes, and his socks weren't worn as they would have been had he been walking in them.
Yeah.
While investigating, the RCMP did buy the exact same socks that Lawrence had been wearing, and they walked in them, and they said that after only a few blocks, the fabric had worn away and their feet had become filthy.
Yeah, but they didn't have to go through all that.
What do you mean?
If they found him and his socks were fucking spotless.
I mean, of course, but I think it's just to prove the point, isn't it? That, come on.
Nah, it's a waste of time.
Either way, they knew there wasn't a chance in hell that he'd walked out there on his own.
Well, yeah, you'd have to be bloody stupid to walk out there with no shoes and he was topless as well.
No, that was Rodney.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, come on. A few days after the discovery of Rodney's body, Daryl is pulled over for not wearing his seatbelt. He asks the officer about the other man who had been found. The officer asks why he was interested in that particular case. Daryl tells the officer that it had happened to him as well. Now, the next day, the same police officer spots Daryl and he calls him over. Daryl is, understandably, you know, a bit scared. He has every reason not to trust the police at this point.
Yeah.
But the officer says to him, "Remember when you were telling me nobody would believe you? I believe you."
Oh, so this is a cop who's going to actually do his job.
Exactly. This officer who had spoken to Daryl reports back to the police chief and an investigation is started. After the attempted murder of Daryl and the bodies of Rodney and Lawrence have been found, the chief of police said during a press conference, quote, "We have nothing that would indicate that they are related, the person being dropped off or the two people that were found."
In the same area?
Well, see, this is it. In a sense, he's right in that, you know, these deplorable acts may not have been perpetrated by the same man or men, but they were But they were certainly connected by the fact that these instances all occurred after Indigenous men were picked up by police officers. And it's a terrifying thought. It's not just one terrible person. This behaviour, the racism, was ingrained in the police force.
I was just about to say, so this is a racism
thing. Yeah, exactly. And with this type of an attitude, who can you trust and who do you turn to? Although it came as no surprise, this systemic racism, there was outrage at the extent and the brutality. And the police were, rightfully so, heavily criticised.
Yeah. People are losing more and more faith in police departments in general.
Did you want to say anything else or is it just stating that?
I thought that was...
No, I think you're right because... you know, even if they've made leaps and bounds and improved certain things, when you get all these historic cases come to the forefront, I mean, it stirs up a lot of shit on whether it's I had no idea about this or the people who've been fighting for it for years going, I fucking told you.
Yeah.
You know? So with the deaths of Rodney and Lawrence and the abandonment of Daryl, this triggered an inquest into another similar case. And that is the case of Neil Stonechild. On the 29th of November 1990, the body of 17-year-old Neil Stonechild was found by construction workers in a field at the edge of town. He was face down, wearing just one shoe, with abrasions on his face.
Who keeps nicking shoes?
The people who were dumping them there.
Why are they nicking?
They're stripping them off and leaving them in the freezing cold.
But why leave them with one shoe?
On the 24th of November, the night of Neil's abduction, temperatures dropped as low as minus 28 degrees Celsius, or minus 18 degrees Fahrenheit. That night, Neil and his friend Jason had left a house party just before midnight. Then they were stopped by police. Neil's friend recalled the night and witnessing his friend being taken by police. Neil said to his friend, with blood already dripping down his face, quote, "Help me. These guys are going to kill me." Now, the initial investigation found no evidence of foul play, but Neil's family claimed that they did not conduct a proper investigation. I would be inclined to agree.
Yeah.
Now, you'll notice with these cases that there's a running theme here. If a person has done something wrong, or at least it's claimed that the person's done something wrong, usually drunk and disorderly or, you know, something relatively mild.
Yeah.
These officers seem to think that they were within their rights to dole out their own justice. Now, Neil did have a previous conviction for breaking and entering, and he was sentenced to live in a group home. But he was not some hardened criminal. As his brother put it, quote, he was a good kid who dabbled in petty crime. He was not involved in, you know, violent or gang-related crime. It wasn't some fucking...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was a kid.
Yeah.
Now, whether this is a factor or not, I do not know. But I'd be quicker to assume it was purely down to him having had a drink that night. In 1991, it was concluded that Neil had died while trying to make his way to the correctional centre to surrender himself. Now, the notion that any of these men were drunk and simply wandered off is ludicrous.
Yeah.
In 1997, a column was written by a Saskatoon police officer which details the story of two cops dropping off a drunk man near the power station. Now, that seems a little bit too specific to be a coincidence.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Where are you getting that story from?
Because they did it.
I mean, whether this man himself did it.
Yeah.
Or a couple of his buddies did. You know, it's... I actually looked up the officer who wrote it. And everything about him seems real positive and great and whatever. Bar this one detail. I'm like, that's kind of a big detail.
Yeah.
Not loving that. So, Daryl, Rodney and Lawrence, that was all in the year 2000. But Neil's case, that was in 1990. When we can so easily jump back 10 years and find another almost identical case of horrific abuse of power fueled by racism, it makes you wonder, just how many cases like this were there? And for how long had this been happening? In response to the Starlight Tours, Oliver Williams, who was in charge of the Special Investigations Unit at the Federation of Saskatchewan Indian Nations, he opened a line for anyone who had complaints about the police, old or new. In the first few weeks, he received over 800 calls.
I'd have thought more.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I mean, like you said, you'd have thought more. How many people are still too scared to say anything?
Yeah.
He said of the matter, quote, the easy answer would be to get rid of an entire generation of policemen. But no, the reality of it is, you can't do that. So what we have to do is concentrate on the younger officers and hopefully change the way they do business. From the 2004 documentary, Two Worlds Colliding, it was stated that in Saskatchewan, a young Native man is more likely to go to jail than finish high school, with Saskatoon having the highest youth incarceration rate in North America. According to statistics reported in March of 2023, although Indigenous people only make up about 5% of the adult population in Canada, they account for 32% of those in custody, 28% of federal sentences, and 50% of women charged with federal offences are Indigenous women.
There's a bit of targeting going on.
Just a tad?
Yeah. Even I can see that.
The shocking revelation that these weren't isolated incidents and that they were clearly, deliberately targeting people. Well, this led to the RCMP creating its largest ever investigative task force. And as crowds of over 400 people marched through the streets, although peaceful, they made their point clear. They demand justice.
See, I just said that. I said it about targeting. I've just said it.
Did you know about this case already?
No. Be a fucking idiot not to realise, but they're not being targeted. You'd have to be an idiot to not realise they're being targeted. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know with protesters and that,
mm-hmm.
they don't come about.
Yeah, so there wasn't, how do I word it? There wasn't enough justice, I suppose.
There never is.
There never is. But there was some repercussions. Ken Munson and Dan Hatchin were charged with assault and unlawful confinement. They admitted to abandoning Daryl at the edge of town in freezing conditions in the middle of the night. But they did try to say that Daryl had asked them to leave him there.
Why would he?
It's
strip me off and leave me there.
It's clearly a cop out of like, no, we did do it, but like, fuck off.
You do know part of the thing is protect.
Protect.
So if someone comes up to you and says, leave me out there, eighth naked, you've got to protect him and say, no.
No, no, Daryl. We cannot do
no,
that.
No, no, Daryl.
Daryl said in a victim impact statement, quote, they've given me a different perspective towards the police. I have no trust whatsoever towards policemen. Again, can't argue that. Yeah. Can't say fairer than that.
Trust him as far as I can throw him.
Ken Munson and Dan Hatchin were fired and found guilty of unlawful confinement, but were not found guilty of assault. For conviction of unlawful confinement, the maximum sentence is 10 years. Ken and Dan were both sentenced to 8 months. So after Ken and Dan were sentenced to a hefty 8 months, Daryl said, quote, I did nothing to deserve having my life come so close to an end. I also did nothing to deserve the nightmares I've had since that night and the fear I feel when I see a police car. Besides, how could it be that two police officers responsible for the protection of citizens decide I deserve a death sentence? There is no justice in that. Now, after the verdict, the police chief, you know, who previously said, none of these are connected, calm down, lads.
Yeah.
Well, he was fired. I mean, well enough for him, really. And
you know what they should have done with him? Took him out there, took his shoes off, stripped him down and left him.
I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't do quite tit for tit in the situation, but... But
I didn't mean leave him out there to die, just enough to scare him.
Yeah, just put the shitters up him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, they went in a different direction. They just sacked him. So with Police Chief Dave Scott getting the boot, they have to bring someone new in. And this person is Russ Sabo.
Just as bad as Fuston.
No.
Oh.
No. So, you know, bringing someone new in and hopefully affecting some change.
Yeah.
Native elders reached out to the new police chief and offered a traditional swearing-in ceremony. Russ said of the ceremony, quote, it was an absolutely moving experience for me. It was very humbling. So this was an offering, an attempt to heal the damage between the native community and the police. Russ also issued an apology on behalf of the Saskatoon police, and this was after he had looked further into the treatment of natives and found further cases of people being dropped off in the middle of nowhere, dating back to the 70s.
What do you mean, offering?
And not, basically, because there is that tension and the distrust.
Yeah.
What's wrong?
I've got something else in my head, I'm sure.
Offering as in, like, I'm extending a hand to you, let's try and, like I said, repair the damage between our two communities.
Right.
In 2003, an inquiry was held in matters relating to the death of Neil Stonechild. The inquiry lasted 14 months, and the final report was released on the 26th of October, 2004. It was found that the police conducted a, quote, superficial and totally inadequate investigation, and that certain officers, as well as their superiors, displayed, quote, self-protective and defensive attitudes towards the case. Larry Hartwig and Brad Senger were on the stand for 2 days. They were the officers who were thought to have had Neil in custody that night. And at the time, Brad was still on probation. There's something really frightening about someone who's so new to the sense of power, yet so confident to abuse it.
Yeah.
Now, you actually do hear Larry, the other officer, talk during, you know, the documentary I mentioned earlier, Two mm-hmm. Worlds Colliding.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, before I even got to this part to do the inquiry, I was sus of this fella.
Because his name's Larry.
Well, yes. I mean, job number one, yeah. Don't trust a Larry.
Yeah.
But it was just the way he was talking. So, right, from my perspective...
Like a smug fucker.
It was kind of, do you know what it was? It was kind of trying to sound good. And it's so transparent. This is okay. Bullshit. Like, from my perspective as someone who has never experienced racial abuse.
Yeah.
I'm obviously naive to a lot of it. And I don't, you know what I mean? Like,
So you mean like he was trying to be the complete opposite. So,
yes.
And it was transparent.
Yeah.
So he's like, I love native people. I would never
not
do anything.
Not exactly, but he was talking about how police are. So, like I said, if I don't know something or I haven't experienced it, you know, obviously I'll try my best to use the correct language or terms, but I might get it wrong and all I can do is apologize and try better next time.
Yeah.
Whereas he was kind of making that point, and when he was saying something along the lines of you have to use the correct language, and he said something like you have to be careful.
Yeah.
And how he said it, I was like, I feel like you're saying that like I have to be careful to protect myself, not to be fair and just to others.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean?
Well, it's like for me, I have experienced racism. But the funny part about it is it's not even for the race that I am.
Yeah, you've had quite a few of...
I've had people come up to me and go, what are you?
You've had quite a few racially charged comments.
Yeah. I look like I'm fond of a poppadom. That was one. But yeah, it's that, what are you? And it's like, fucking English. Like, what do you mean, what are you? Like Tom Segura said, that's fucking rude. Can't ask that.
Well, like someone we know, someone actually went up to her and like tapped their skin to ask her where she's from.
Yeah, they asked where she was from and she answered. She said, oh, here, Dublin. And he went, no, I mean, and rubbed his skin.
And it's like that digging to, why do you need to know?
Yeah.
What does it fucking matter? But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the point I'm making. You know, obviously you try your best to be inclusive and use correct terminology, but like at the end of the day, if I get something wrong, all you can do is apologize and learn from it.
Yeah.
Whereas this guy was very clearly like, oh, you got to be careful.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't like how you're fucking saying that. But anyway, on the 12th of February, 2004, Russ Szabo fired both Larry and Brad.
Yay. Brad as well.
I know Brad. Clearly a dick.
We're going to have no listeners left.
No, we're insulting a lot of them. A lot of them.
What is it? Kevin, Larry, Les.
Les, yeah. You want to watch out for him.
Brad, Chad.
Chad, yeah. Craig.
People who name the cat Salem.
In 1998... the original file detailing the investigation into Neil's death was destroyed during a routine purge of old records. Shortly before the investigating officer retired, Neil's clothes were burnt.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's not good.
It's not looking great. Constable Ernie Lutet said of the report, which was the basis of the inquiry, if he had ever seen another case handled the same way, he would have quit the force. Recommendations made in the inquiry were implemented, one of which was all police cars were now equipped with GPS tracking. Audio and video recording systems were also installed.
Aren't cop cars tracked anyway?
Well, at the time, I'm guessing they weren't, or at least it wasn't mandated for them to be.
I can say, 'cause what happens if you nick one?
Another big change that came about was how complaints were managed. Before 2006, all complaints were sent to the police department for them to deal with at their own discretion. They are now sent directly to the Saskatchewan Public Complaints Commission.
See, for me, I every time I try and say it, Saskatchewan.
Yeah, I am like trying to make sure I'm pronouncing it because
Saskatchewan.
Saskatchewan. You also struggle with Massachusetts, don't you?
Yes.
Massachusetts.
I wasn't going to say
it. You weren't going to say it, were you?
No.
We've lost every listener in Massachusetts now. In 2016, the police were accused of removing references to the Starlight Tours from Wikipedia. Police have acknowledged that the entries have been edited using a computer within the police department, but they said that they couldn't determine who had done so.
Got you, bitch.
Well, they haven't.
They haven't, no.
They're honing in on them.
But they're not. They don't know who did it.
Well, they know it's in the police force.
I mean, that is fucking disgusting, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it makes you a lot more suspect, because how much more is there to uncover?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? On the 2nd of April, 2023, Daryl Knight passed away at the age of 56. His brother said of him, quote, "He's left a footprint for many. His character was heartwarming." Tasha Hubbard, the director of Two Worlds Colliding, said, quote, "He had real sympathy for the men who had died. I think he felt that responsibility to speak up." She also said that he showed, quote, "tremendous courage in doing so." Neil Stonechild. He was just 17 years old at the time of his death. He was an accomplished athlete, and he could have gone on to have had a promising career in wrestling.
Wrestling, as the Americans call it.
Lawrence was 30 years old when he died. His father said that they had raised their children to be proud of who they are. Quote, "You're just as much native as you are German." He added, "It should have been a little bit more recognised that he was a human being." Lawrence was a curious person who was said to have always had a thirst for knowledge.
Bit like myself.
And Rodney, who was 25 years old. I'm sorry to say I struggled to find anything really about Rodney beyond his name and age. So, for lack of information, I'll again quote Lawrence's father and say, "It should have been a little bit more recognised that he was a human being."
Rest in peace, Rodders.
The murders of Rodney and Lawrence, to this day, remain unsolved. No police officer has faced convictions for their roles in the deaths of these men. Daryl Weingarten, a criminal lawyer who represented Jason Roy, Neil's friend, said, quote, "Police have improved in many ways, but some still harbour a good guy, bad guy mentality. It's not quantifiable, but it's there."
Quantifiable?
Yeah.
Quantifiable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, able to sum up and add it, like, here it is.
Okay.
And that is the case of the Starlight Tours. So while looking into the Starlight Tours, I did find a few other cases of people who had been subjected to similar...
police brutality.
Yeah. Lloyd Dusty Horn, 53 years old. He was in police custody for 18 hours and was suffering from hallucinations during this time. He was found frozen to death in minus 35 degrees, 3 hours after his release.
Fucking hell.
Darcy Dean Ironchild, 33. He was in police custody for several hours before being sent home in a taxi. His body was found not long after. These are just the ones that are kind of available.
Yeah.
You know, I just search online and you're going to find this coming up. I'd love to know what the fuck has been hidden and covered up.
Yeah.
There was a case not too long back of a man named Bowden Umperville. During an altercation with police, 5 stun guns were fired, a total of 15 times. He was pepper sprayed and beaten by officers with both batons and their knees. He was taken to hospital on the 1st of April and placed on life support. He died on the 26th of April, with an autopsy concluding that his death was the result of cardiac arrest caused by positional asphyxia, as well as cocaine intoxication. It was determined that the force used was justifiable given the level of resistance displayed. Police claimed that he was carrying a gun within a holster and a knife, which was strapped to his chest. So his gun's still in his holster, a knife is across his chest.
Yeah.
Now, there's more to the story. We're not covering it right now, obviously. I just wanted to mention this because regardless of the situation, that is very fucking excessive.
Yes.
And I've had a quick look into it, but not deep dive. But from what I can see of it, I cannot see a reason for that level. And it's been justified, given his resistance.
I think one of the mistakes they did was, well, there's nothing we can do about the staff. All we can do is the newer recruits, train them properly. No, absolutely fucking not. Either put them all through fucking the new training, or once you've got the newer staff trained up, fuck the older staff off who aren't doing the job properly.
This is the thing. Like, I mean, I get what he's saying. You can't just get rid of your entire police force, but it's also the lesser of two evils. Like, do you know what I mean? It's either you have a police force, but they're shit, or you don't. I don't know. It's one of those things I don't want to comment on because I don't know what the right answer is, you know? Yeah. But clearly, I mean, this isn't news to anyone, I don't think. There's a hell of a lot of fucking issues. Hell of a lot.
Yeah.
So what do you think of that case?
Fucking shit.
I kind of just threw some more shit at you right at the end, didn't I? Yeah, fucking take that. Yeah. If that wasn't enough for you.
Yeah, fucking shit. Like, what are they to do? They just got to live in fear.
Yeah, basically. It's fucking shit. At least when they got the new police chief in, it seemed as though he was trying to move it in the right direction. From the sounds of it.
Tasers and knees?
Well, no, not that situation. But I'm saying, like, at least admitting that clearly these are connected and this has been going on for decades.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, with that fucking shit show done.
My telling of the case or the actual case itself?
Bit of both.
Yeah.
Oddity.
Oddity. So, old Albert Hoffman. Albie, even. Familiar?
Hoffman. I do know a Hoffman, I think.
Do you? Is it old Albie over there?
An actor?
No.
Oh.
So Albert Hoffman was a Swiss chemist credited with the discovery of LSD. Now, during his time researching, he was originally attempting to find a drug that could stimulate circulation and breathing. It was in 1938 when he was first able to synthesize the compounds, but it wouldn't be until 5 years later when he realized exactly what the substance can do.
I know what the substance can fucking do. Can fuck right off, that's what it can do.
Oh yeah, you got drugged once, didn't you?
Yes, when I was younger, bought some cannabis, and yeah, we first joint in, and I was fucking hallucinating. I didn't feel stoned, put it that way. And we then later found out, but it had been dipped in LSD.
No good?
No.
Maybe good if you'd known.
Yeah. It's like, do you know, say if you're, if you make yourself a cup of tea and you go to drink.
Yeah. I don't know where this is going.
Say you've made yourself a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And you go to drink the cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
And something touches your lip. What? And you weren't you're obviously not expecting something to touch your lip.
What's touching your lip?
It could be a bit of biscuit. Or...
I don't dunk me biscuits now.
Well, if something touches your lip and you're not expecting it, it's fucking awful.
It's like when I make us tea and I accidentally pick up your mug and I get sugar in me tea. And I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Yeah, but only it's LSD. LSD in your tea.
Yes. I was expecting to be chilled out.
Yeah.
And instead,
off your fucking nut.
Yeah. Yeah.
No good.
No.
So back to Albie. Like I said, it wouldn't be till 5 years later when he realised exactly what this substance can do. After accidentally consuming LSD during his research.
Easily done.
Albert was said to have, quote, sank into a not unpleasant intoxicated-like condition. And he said he experienced an extremely stimulated imagination. I bet he fucking did. Quote, uninterrupted streams of fantastic pictures, extraordinary shapes, with intense kaleidoscope plays of colours.
So he's off his tits.
Off his fucking nut. So with that, what do you reckon Albert did next?
Took more.
That's exactly what he did. Yeah. 3 days later, on the 19th of April, 1943, Albert deliberately ingested 250 micrograms of LSD. And after this, he was off his fucking tits. He then asked his assistant to escort him home because he was in an awful state. Albert was having a bad trip. While spiraling, laid on his sofa, he described his surroundings as transforming in terrifying ways. Basically, the room was spinning. Objects and pieces of furniture, as he put it, quote, assumed grotesque, threatening forms. Now, while all of this is happening, his neighbour bobs round and she's there to drop off some milk.
She has some.
No, no.
Okay.
So she goes over and she's like, Albie, here's your milk. And he said that, you know, he opened the door and it wasn't, you know, Mrs. Doyle from next door.
Yeah.
But that she appeared to him as a, quote, malevolent, insidious witch.
Okay. He's got more of an imagination than I did.
Well, this is the thing. So
we were sat in a field and someone was sat cross-legged and I thought it was a pyramid.
Oh.
That's as much as my imagination went.
Yeah, no, he's getting into it.
Okay.
He's really into it. So he says goodbye to the malevolent, insidious witch, aka Mrs. Doyle.
Yeah.
And then he downs 2 liters of milk and just continues his freak out.
How does he do that? Do you remember after that hot wing challenge,
the amount of
milk
stomach.
I drank?
Yeah.
Like, I was
rough. It sits heavy.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, so he said he felt as though a demon had taken possession of his mind, body and soul. He begins jumping up and down and flailing about, screaming in an attempt to release the demon from him. But after he had no luck of getting rid of the bugger, he slumped back down on the sofa, obviously absolutely bollocksed. After that, and bear in mind the milk as well.
Mm.
He would later realise that the bad trip was simply down to the quantity of LSD he had ingested. So he's not shitting on LSD. He's playing around. He's trying to get it right.
Okay.
So Albert wasn't just having the crack testing out these drugs. He was doing this for the greater good. He was hopeful that this drug could later be used for psychotherapeutic matters.
Psychedelics?
Yes.
You're shocked I know that word, aren't you?
No. You've done it. Oh. You've done the psychedelics, mate. Of course, you know, with him wanting this used for therapy purposes, he means obviously after being prescribed and within a controlled environment. Now, as with pretty much any other drug, LSD is not always used as it was initially intended for.
No.
Albert later said, quote, I produce the substance as a medicine. It's not my fault if people abuse it. This coming from the man who is off his fucking nut on LSD at work. In the late 50s, still fascinated by hallucinogenic substances and the effects they can have, Albert began working with psilocybin mushrooms and was able to isolate and synthesize the hallucinogens within them.
Never messed about with mushrooms.
I haven't.
No, I won't go near him. I know someone who goes up into Wicklow Mountains to pick him.
I remember you telling me.
You don't know what they are.
Doesn't even know what they are.
Wait.
He's hoping to be the next Albie. Over the years, Albert had ingested LSD hundreds of times, but maintained that it was a powerful, potentially dangerous drug that demanded respect.
Well, they've all got the uses, haven't they? You know, like cocaine is in codeine.
Cocaine?
As a pain. What?
What?
Yeah, cocaine's in codeine as a painkiller. Cannabis fucking...
Everything.
Arthritis fucking...
Does the lot.
Yeah. But remember when I was taking it, you know, you'd put your life in danger to buy an eighth. You know,
your life in danger.
You would be getting in strangers' cars and strangers' houses.
Yeah.
Whereas now you can just, well, you can't over here, but in America, you can just walk into a store and buy some Squidgy Black or some...
I think it was actually, I think Martin, our admin, who sent a video, and it was a woman saying, I can go to the store and buy pot, but I'm doing like a fucking illegal deal to get some eggs.
Yeah. Yeah.
What the fuck is going on?
Just, right. If you haven't worked it out, America, if eggs are expensive, buy some chickens.
Get a few chickens.
Just get some chickens on your back garden. A
couple chickens.
You haven't got a washing line.
Not everyone... Okay, so for anyone who has a garden, that's a fair point. But not everyone has the space, Neil. Make eggs affordable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, back to Albie. As a child, Albert had a deep love of nature and spent much of his time outdoors. It was this affection for nature that inspired his venture into chemistry. Quote, it happened on a May morning. I have forgotten the year, but I can still point to the exact spot where it occurred. On a forest path on Martinsburg, above Baden. As I strolled through the freshly greened woods, filled with birdsongs and lit up by the morning sun, all at once everything appeared in an uncommonly clear light. It shone with the most beautiful radiance, speaking to the heart, as though it wanted to encompass me in its majesty. I was filled with an indescribable sensation of joy, oneness, and blissful security.
He's off his fucking tits while he's saying all this.
That's as a child is saying. But that is, that, like, it is lovely. You know what I mean? Yeah. But yeah, that's what I was thinking. I knew, I knew when I put that in that you were going to be like, what the fuck is he on about? On the 29th of April, 2008, in his home in the hilltops, which overlook Basel in Switzerland, Albert passed away at the age of 102.
That's no age.
That's no age at all. I tell you what, the LSD was working for him, 102.
Yeah.
That's not bad. I also just like that he had the home overlooking the hilltops with his love of nature and all. It was...
Yeah.
You know, if you're gonna pass away anywhere, you wouldn't do it in your home overlooking the hilltops.
Yeah. You've been on the hilltops. Your tits with that view.
Huh?
Imagine being off your tits with that view.
Oh, God, could you imagine?
See dragons fucking flying about and all sorts.
I thought that was a nice story. Interesting story. And then also, like you said, you know, it just came from his love of nature. It was kind of just an organic progression in his life.
Oh, I'm just happy that he had a better experience with LSD than I did.
Well, not exactly, because the insidious witch.
Got that bit.
Well, yeah, that's the story of Albert Hoffman, the man who discovered LSD, and it's, depending on who you are, wonderful or horrific effects.
So maybe I should try it again and it might increase my vocabulary.
Yeah, would do. Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion, or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.